And if you could, take your Bibles and let's turn together to 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy chapter 5, as you're turning there, I do want to remind you of a couple of things that we have going on this week. First of all, on Friday night at 7 p.m., we're having Dr. Steve Pettit, and he will be preaching in the evening service. It'll be a special meeting. This really is sort of like our typical revival services that we would have kind of in our fall-winter time period. So we're looking forward to having him Friday night, and then we're going to go ahead and have meetings on Saturday morning as well. We'll start at 9 o'clock, and we'll have our first session, then we'll break for a little bit just to give us an opportunity to stretch and just enjoy some fellowship, and then we'll have our second session. And then again, he'll be preaching on Sunday morning, and he'll also be with us in Sunday school. So I hope that you will do your best to be at all of those activities. I think that that will be a tremendous blessing. And if you don't join us for that, I think you're going to miss out on a great opportunity to be fed spiritually, to be challenged and encouraged. And someone might say, you know, Friday night, Saturday. Well, we don't do this all the time. The truth is, this is something that we only do occasionally. And because of his schedule, he is a college president. He can't just travel anytime. So that's when he's able to travel, and so we're looking forward to having him. Steve Pettit has preached at Anchor, though it's been many years ago, so I'm sure that when he was here the last time, some of you might have remembered him, and I know that he is a blessing. He's also, for many years, he was not just an evangelist, but he also worked in Christian camp ministry, so a lot of interesting background there, and I think you'll enjoy getting to meet him. 1 Timothy chapter 5, we're going to go ahead and read this together. Also, I'll mention Tiny Trackers and Truth Trackers started up tonight, so all of our kids and our workers are back there in the back getting started with our fall children's program, Wednesday night program. Also, we are going to get back into our normal Sunday school schedule. So on the 20th of September, we are going to be going back to our normal Sunday school time where we have morning Sunday school for the kids. We're also going to be starting back our children's nursery, and there are some protocols we're going to have to follow with that, but with some of the changes and what we're allowed to do in our state, we're going to go ahead and we're going to do that, and I think that that'll be a real help to some of our moms with little kids. So 1 Timothy chapter 5, we're going to read verses 3 to 16. We've been in this passage for a couple of weeks, and I hope that today we'll be able to wrap up this section. Honor widows that are widows indeed. But if any widow have children or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home and to requite their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. Now she that is a widow indeed and desolate trusteth in God and continueth in supplications and prayers night and day. But she that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth, and these things give in charge that they may be blameless. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Let not a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old, having been the wife of one man, well reported of, for good works. If she have brought up children, if she hath lodged strangers, if she have washed the saints' feet, if she hath relieved the afflicted, if she hath diligently followed every good work. But the younger widows refuse, for when they have begun to wax wanton against Christ, they will marry, having damnation because they cast off their first faith. And withal they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, not only idle, but tattlers also and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully, for some have already turned aside after Satan. If any man or woman that believeth have widows, let them relieve them. Let not the church be charged, that it may relieve them that are widows indeed. Now, we come to this passage of Scripture, we're reminded that this is giving very specific instruction regarding how to deal with widows in the church. And not only is it going to tell us how to deal with widows in the church, but it really also gives us a lot of counsel and godly wisdom to understand how we're supposed to look out for those who are vulnerable. So it's not just this one scenario that we can learn from, but the truth is that the principles that drive the specific application that Paul's giving to the church at Ephesus, those principles can be applied into lots of different contexts. Maybe you're dealing with someone who's not technically a widow, but it's a single mom raising her kids. Maybe you're dealing with a situation where you have a person who they have had a very troubled life and you want to help them, you want to encourage them, and you want to strengthen them, and you have a tremendous heart to help them, but the reality is you don't know the best way to do it. Well, there are principles that we find in the passage in front of us that will help us. When we think about our family and how our parents get older and there comes a point where no longer are they taking care of us, but we're starting to think about how we're going to have to take care of them. There comes a point where the principles that we find in this passage become extremely helpful. What's also interesting is when we talk about the roles that God gives to men and women and the responsibilities that we have within our homes and within society, we see principles that are taught in this passage as well. So there's a lot that we can talk about. We will only scratch the surface, but I think that the things that we will get into will be extremely helpful to you. Now, the first time we met, we talked about the Old Testament background. We wanted to get a good understanding of how God viewed fatherless and widows, people that are very vulnerable. And we saw that God cares about people in those vulnerable situations. Not only does he care about them, he has a heart for them, but God actually put in his law protections for those individuals, commands for those who are not vulnerable so that they would look out for those that actually were vulnerable. We then came to a second truth that was very important. We saw that we must be cautious to minister in a godly way. And we began to get into several principles about how we minister in a godly way to people. The first principle we saw on the second day was that we cannot nor should we financially support all widows. Now, that's specifically talking about widows. But we could put a lot of different categories in there. We cannot financially, physically support every poor person or every person that's going through a time of destitution or difficulty. We have to be discerning about who we help, how far we help them, the kind of parameters that we put in place when we help them. We have to recognize that we do not have the resources, we do not have the responsibility to be an endless supply of money and care to every person that lives. The reality is that God puts specific people in our lives, and when they come into that time of need, we go and help those individuals, but we cannot help everybody. But the reality is, if every person would take the responsibilities that they have seriously about those individuals that God brings into their life, then what we would see is that people who are truly destitute would be helped. One of the problems, though, is that a lot of people turn a blind eye. That's why some people don't get the help they need. One of the great problems, too, though, is that it's not that people turn a blind eye, but people want help on their own terms. If you want help on your own terms, you really don't want help. That's a very important thing to recognize. It's like a person who comes to you. I remember I was at a gas station one time with my brother. Actually, it was a Waffle House / gas station. And we're sitting there and we're eating, and a man came to us, and he said, "I'm really hungry. Can you help me?" I said, "Absolutely. What would you like?" He said, "I'd like a burger at McDonald's." I said, "Well, this is a Waffle House, and they serve burgers at Waffle House. Would you like to sit down and eat with us?" He said, "No, I want a burger at McDonald's." I said, "Well, I can't give you money for a burger at McDonald's, but you can gladly join us and eat with us tonight at Waffle House, and I'll pay for it entirely." He didn't really want help. It's the honest truth. If the man was truly destitute, he truly needed help, he would say, "Thank you." And he'd sit down and he'd eat a meal with us at Waffle House. He'd be very appreciative of it. The reality is we cannot support every person. And Paul addresses that even within the context of the church. The second principle that we see is this: we shouldn't help in a way that eliminates people's personal responsibilities. So when we go to help somebody, we don't want to become an enabler that really enables them to be lazy and not do what they're supposed to do. Or that enables people that are responsible to help them not do their responsibility. And so it's very important that we do not enable people to not do what they're supposed to do. And so he addresses that issue. He says, if any man or woman that believeth have widows, let them relieve them. Let not the church be charged that it may relieve them that are widows indeed. So he says, if you have people in the church that have family members who can and should take care of them, then don't take their responsibility upon the church. Let them fulfill their obligations. You say, well, what if they're unwilling to do that? Well, then you address it in a different way. But don't be an enabler of bad behavior. The third principle we're going to see is this. Or we actually talked about this a little bit, and we're going to get into it in greater detail tonight. And that is this principle. We should properly prioritize who we support. We have to decide on a case-by-case basis what we can do, what we're responsible to do, and then we have to go about doing it in the very best way possible. Notice the way that he puts it in verses 5 and 6. He says, now she that is a widow indeed and desolate, that word's extremely important. That means this person has no means of taking care of themselves. And not only do they have no means of taking care of themselves, but they do not have individuals who are responsible to step in on their behalf. He says, the widow that is desolate trusteth in God and continueth in supplications and prayers night and day. Now, this is an indication that this woman, who is a widow indeed and is desolate, has really one source of sustenance. And you know who that is? It's God. And so she says, God, you've got to meet my needs here. And so you know what God says? I'm going to meet your needs through people in the church being responsible to do what they're supposed to do. Very interesting. But then he says this, but she that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth. You say, well, what's Paul talking about? Paul is indicating that there are two kinds of widows in his scenario. They both have lost a husband. They both are by themselves. They both are in a difficult set of circumstances. But one trusts God and has no ability to protect and to defend and to provide for themselves. The other person is not truly destitute. In fact, they are living in pleasure and they are taking advantage of the good kindness of the people around them. And he says, this person lives in pleasure and is dead while she liveth. And what's very interesting is he's going to break it down quite a bit later on in the passage. We're going to look at what he means by she's living, but she's dead while she lives. But let's talk for a minute about what he's saying about priorities. The widow who is trusting in God is not only trusting in God, but she's ministering in the church. In fact, this is the person that comes to mind when I think about this. In Luke chapter 2, verse 36, we're introduced to a lady named Anna. It says, there was one Anna, a prophetess, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. She was of great age and had lived with a husband 7 years from her virginity, and she was a widow of about 84 years. Now, there's a lot of debate about like how old she was and how long she'd been a widow, but it appears that she was married for 7 years, and from that point on, 84 years, 84 years, this lady has been a widow. That is a very difficult position to be in. And yes, it's true in those days people got married really young, so maybe she was 100 years old if she got married when she was 16, but you get the idea. She lived like that a long time. But this is what it says. She did not depart from the temple, but she served God with fasting and prayer night and day. This is a woman who, even though she was desolate, even though she was in a tough place, she was using what little she had, the ability to pray and minister and encourage people, and she did that. And I think that that's really the sense of what he says when he says that there is a widow who is desolate, and she trusts God to continue in supplications and prayers night and day. This is the kind of person that she is. He then goes on to say this. The other widow has learned to be idle. If you go down to verse 13, she's learned to be idle. You know, God created us to use our minds, to use our resources, to use our energy, to use our strength. He wants us to be driven. He wants us to actually work hard and accomplish things with our life. But he says this other widow has actually learned how to, instead of using those gifts that God's given her, those skills that could actually be used to benefit other people, to actually provide for herself, instead what she's doing is she's being idle. That means she's not working. She's not industrious at all. It says she's a tattler, a busybody. Rather than working with her hands and being involved in things that benefit and help other people, this lady is going around and stirring up trouble with people. She's a gossip. She's full of other people's business. And instead of being diligent, she's diligent in other people's business that is none of her business. He goes on to say this, she speaks things which ought not be. Maybe the best modern example we could have is somebody who spends all their time on social media talking about all the things going on in people's lives. That was the ancient version of it, I guess. But notice the words they learn, to be idle. We don't work. We actually learn how to be lazy. And we learn how to, rather than do what we're supposed to do, do things that are very detrimental to others. He then goes on, he talks about the qualifications of those who are going to be cared for by the church. In verses 9 and 10, he says this, let not a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old, having been the wife of one man, well reported of for good works. Now let me talk about this for a minute. First of all, he's going to say this needs to be a woman who's at least 60 years old. Now there's a reason for that. Later on, he's going to say that she will not be tempted to go and get married. Now, it's not wrong for her to go and get married. It's not sinful for her to go and get married. In fact, we're going to see later in the text, he actually encourages a widow who is younger to actually go and get married, to raise a family, and to put all of her energies into living what was a typical life of a mother and a mother and a wife. But she's past that time period. She can't do that. She's 60 years old. Not only that, she's somebody that when she was married, she was known as a faithful woman. It says, the wife of one man. You know, it's interesting. We talk about a person who is a bishop. It says he must be blameless, the husband of one wife. The idea is someone who has the character of a one-woman kind of man. This is a woman who has the character of a one-man kind of woman. In other words, she wasn't out doing stuff she shouldn't have been doing. She was faithful to her husband. She was faithful to her family. And unfortunately, through difficult circumstances, she's all alone now. Well reported of for good works. When you think of this person, you say, there's nothing about her that says lazy, disreputable, troublesome. She's a godly woman. He talks about the kinds of things that fall under that category of good works. She hath brought up children. If she hath lodged strangers, if she hath washed the saints' feet, if she hath relieved the afflicted, if she hath diligently followed every good work. He talks about the kind of ministry that this woman would have had. She raised her children. Now, notice he says if, okay? Obviously, she doesn't have living children now. And of course, in the ancient world, infant mortality was a huge problem. People didn't always live to be very old. A lot of people went to war. A lot of people died in war. A lot of people died very young. So this woman, if she had children, she raised them well. She was hospitable. She opened her house up to people. When it talks about her washing the disciples' feet, the idea is that she would welcome people into her home and she would serve in some of the lowliest of places. She was a minister. The idea is she was a person who did the things that other people would have said, I don't have time for that. I'm too good for that. She said, I'm going to serve others. She's merciful. She looks out for the people that are destitute. And this is so interesting. When she was in the position of ability, she ministered to those in need. Now she's in the position of destitute, and God says, you need to minister to her in her time of need. We all get there one day. And then he mentions that she's diligent. She's known for good works. You say, why these qualifications? Well, it was to show that there needed to be a priority of resources. It was to prioritize those that are truly destitute and worthy of honor. It's even possibly talking about a position. And when I say position, I don't mean like she's a pastor, she's a deacon. We're not talking about an official church capacity here, okay? But we're talking about somebody who is involved in ministry and serving in the church. The truth is, right now in our church, there are ladies who are older, who are actually serving similar to the kinds of things you would expect somebody in this lady's position to do. They go and visit. They're not going to visit as tattlers or busybodies. They're going to minister to those who can't get out of their home, who can't go and do the things that they used to be able to do. People that just need to be encouraged, prayed with, talked to, strengthened. They go and they do that. People who have things in their house they're not physically able to do, and they go and they minister in that way. That's the way this lady is going to function in the church. And so the reason that we see these qualifications is likely because it's about priority. It's about giving honor to those who are honorable. It's about someone even becoming a part of the church in a way that they're going to minister in that capacity for years to come. In other words, when she can't go out and work, her work is going to be in the ministry, if you want to put it that way. Just like a pastor labors in the ministry of the word, preaching, teaching, discipling, going and visiting people, that's the kind of stuff that this lady is going to be involved in, consumed in the ministry work. Not preaching, okay? Don't misunderstand me there. We come to a fourth principle. Don't try to help people in a way that hinders their future. Now, this is something that's really important for us to understand. And I will tell you, it is extremely difficult to not do what the text is warning us not to do. You know, one of the things that I think every missionary experiences who goes to a country that is not like a Western country, like a Canada or the United States or a European country, but goes to a part of the world that is in the developing world. One of the things that really grips people when they go to a country like that is the level of poverty that they see. You know, I in my mind go back to some of the places that I walked on visitation, some of the houses that I sat in front of when I was a missionary in West Africa. And I want you to realize that when we go into a context like that as Westerners, as Americans, who are used to seeing multiple cars in every driveway, okay, we own our own house, we own our own property, we have the ability to do things that most people in other parts of the world would never even dream of being able to do. We live at a level very different than most of human history has lived. We look at people in those situations and immediately we say, why can't we dump resources into those contexts? Why can't we dump money? Why can't we dump medicine? Why can't we dump infrastructure? Why can't we dump technology into those situations and bring people up so quickly? And the reality is, even if we dump all those resources into those contexts, unless we were to do it in the right way, we would not bring people up at all. In fact, not only would we not bring them up, I'm convinced we would make their state worse. It's so interesting if we were to read about some of the things that we do as a nation, how we send money to other nations to help them with buying food and buying medicine and building hospitals and those kinds of things. Do you have any concept of how much money we as a nation waste and just becomes a part of a bureaucracy where people at the top just soak in all these resources and it doesn't touch the average person in the nation? You cannot imagine how much it happens. You just can't imagine it. Have you ever tried to help someone start a business who didn't have the skills and the tools to be able to do it, and you poured a significant amount of money into that just to watch it go to waste? I have. I have, okay? I have successfully helped people, and I have not successfully seen people helped. Why do I bring that up? I bring that up to say this. It is possible that the way that we seek to help people actually cripples them in the long run. It's possible. And we have to be so cautious that before we set out to help somebody, we do it in a way that does not hinder their future. We don't create a dependency that we can never wean them off of. We want to create in people the opportunity to help themselves be responsible with their own futures. And what's so amazing is that the Apostle Paul actually addresses that very issue when he talks about widows in the church. He says, it's possible that when you see a younger widow who is in a very difficult position, that in your desire to help her in her very difficult position, you actually cripple her in the future. He says, don't do that. Here's how he expresses it. The younger widows refuse. That's a strong word. Don't take them into the church's role. Don't support them financially. That doesn't mean you don't love them, you don't show mercy and kindness to them, but do not financially provide for them as if they are in the same position as the other widow. You can't do that. Why? When they have begun to wax wanton against Christ, they will marry, having damnation because they've cast off their first faith, and withal they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, not only idle, but tattlers also and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. Now you say, what in the world is Paul talking about? Bringing damnation on themselves, casting off their first faith, waxing wanton, what does he mean? Well, the idea behind what's going on is it appears when a woman was going to be taken into the role and supported by the church in this capacity, she was taking a very solemn obligation and responsibility at the time. In other words, she'd reached a point in her life where she said, you know what, I'm not going to be able to remarry. I'm not going to be able to raise children. This is the only opportunity that I have. I want to serve in the church. And so I'm going to give myself fully and dedicate myself 100% to the Lord's work. And they said, okay, then we're going to take you on and we're going to support you financially 100%. Just like we're supporting our pastor. Just like in the Old Testament, they supported those who were the Levites. We're going to take care of you, but you need to be faithful to your duties. Basically, what he's saying is this. If you take a younger widow into the role, there's going to be a point where she is going to get frustrated with that commitment she took on. She's going to say, you know, I can remarry. I'd like to get married. I'd like to have a family. I'd like to have children. I'm kind of used to not doing the work that I'm physically able to do. And you know what's going to happen? That person will lose their drive to do what they're supposed to do. They're going to lose that will to be responsible, to take care of themselves, to do what God has naturally put in us to do, to get married, to have a family, to be a responsible person taking care of those entrusted to our care. In other words, this person's going to have a compromised conscience. When he uses the term damnation, he's not talking about being cast into eternal destruction. In fact, he's using that term in the same way that Paul uses it when he says, he that doubteth is damned if he eats. Because he eateth not of faith, whatsoever is not of faith is sin. The idea is when you make a decision with a compromised conscience, it's going to destroy that conscience of yours. That's what he's saying here. The end result of taking in a younger widow is ultimately going to cripple her future. It's going to compromise her conscience. It's going to cause her to get frustrated with God. It's going to cause her to become lazy. It's going to cause her to become a busybody doing things she's not supposed to do. Well, if the principle applies in this context, would it not in other contexts? And the answer is, of course it would. The reality is we can do the exact same thing to people in our lives who are not widows, who are in different context situations, but we can do the exact same thing if we help them in a way that doesn't really help them. It actually hinders their future. Principle 5, encourage younger women to marry and have a family. Verses 14 and 15, he says this, I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully, for some are already turned aside to Satan. Now, it's really interesting. When he talks about the younger women here, it's not clear if he's saying the younger widows or just younger women in general. I don't really know for certain. I would kind of lean towards saying he's talking about the younger widows. He just talked about younger widows in the verses right before this. But it also seems that he's giving a general principle that we should understand about life. as people are getting older, there comes a point where they need to put away childish things and they need to be responsible adults. That's really what he's saying. There's a time when people need to get married, they need to start a family, and they need to put their energies into doing what God created them to do. You know, it's interesting. In our society, we are losing this sense altogether, 100%. And I know there's got to be balance in some of these things, okay? I totally understand that. I mean, in our country, people used to get married at 15 and 16 all the time. And that's not happening anymore. And I'm not saying that that's the way it should be at all. But what I am saying is this. There does come a point where young people need to be challenged to be adults, to be responsible. And so that's really what he's saying. Embrace the responsibilities and the blessings that God has designed for you as a woman. And really, the reality is that the same thing could be stated to a man. The truth is, it's a lot easier not to be a married person. It's a lot easier not to have a family. You don't have to worry about responsibilities and the burdens of domestic life in a home. It's a much simpler, freer life. But that's not the way that God designed us to live. He wants us to embrace the blessings and the responsibilities. And an unwillingness to embrace God's design will open the door to Satan's attacks. And his point is that these attacks can lead to terrible spiritual compromises and wasted opportunities to serve God and others. Now, I know that there are other scriptures that talk about the blessings of singleness, okay? We have to recognize those are in the Bible. So not every person is supposed to marry. I know that. Not every person who gets married is going to be able to raise children. God may not give them the opportunity to do that. And so we recognize that God's sovereignty is involved in those issues. But as a general rule, as a general principle, this is what we need to encourage young people to do. Take responsibility and enjoy the blessings that God has created for you in the responsibility of your home life. The last principle that we'll mention here tonight is take care of your family. Take care of your family. He says it in verse 8 and he says it in verse 16. He says, if any provide not for his own and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. And again in verse 16 he says, if any man or woman that believeth have widows, let them relieve them. Let not the church be charged that it may relieve them that are widows indeed. Twice in this passage, Paul emphasizes that families need to look out for their families. The reality is there's a point in time in life where we may have to set aside certain things we want to do in life to take on the responsibility of taking care of mom, or taking care of dad, or taking care of a grandparent, or taking care of an uncle, or taking care of an aunt. God may put us in a place where we have to set aside what we wanted to do, what we dreamed of doing, and we do what we're responsible to do. The reality is it is so much easier for us to dream big and go somewhere else and minister to somebody else's family and to ignore our own family. So interesting, when I was, I think it was around 2008, 9, 10, somewhere in there, there was a book written called Radical by David Platt. I know you guys have come in contact. This is a New York Times bestseller. There was another Christian writer who wrote kind of a sequel to that book, maybe a rebuttal on some level, and it was called Ordinary. And what's funny is the two books looked pretty much the exact same. One was orange and one was orange, the other one was orange. And the one was emphasizing, David Platt's book was emphasizing, you need to make sure you don't waste your life and dream big and give all your resources to the Lord's work. And, you know, his burden, his desire is a good desire. But one of the things that I can say as a critique of that book is that I do think it lacks some of the balance that we need. And that's what the book Ordinary does. It brings the balance. And this is what he said. It's far easier to go on a missions trip to a poor country and give shoes and clothing to people and feel really good about what you're doing there while you totally ignore your next door neighbor, while you totally ignore your kids, while you totally ignore your wife or your family members. He said, we feel really good about those big opportunities over there when we have big opportunities right here. And he says, don't neglect the ordinary duties of life. I can't tell you how much that book resonated in my heart and convicted me in so many ways. The fact is that there are people that will abandon their families to do God's work when God says your work is to take care of your family. You know, sometimes we read stories about missionaries of the past who basically left their families to let them raise their kids alone while they went all over the world and became famous missionaries. I hate to say this, but this passage right here is a stunning rebuke to that behavior. It really is. The reality is there are a lot of pastors, missionaries, evangelists who should spend more time ministering to their families than they do. Maybe I'd even put myself in that category sometimes. It's the truth. We can neglect our greatest duties. We can be so focused on serving God in a big way over here, yet he says, I gave you this incredible stewardship, and they live with you, and they sit at the table with you. It's the mom that raised you. It's the dad that raised you. And so the text tells us, if we don't provide for our own, we are worse than an infidel. Someone who is not a Christian. Someone who doesn't have a biblical worldview. We've denied the faith. We are acting as someone who actually doesn't live out what he says he believes. Non-Christians know that they have a moral obligation to take care of their family. They know that. It's inborn. We recognize we're supposed to do it. And so that's why it's such a stunning thing when we don't do it. If the unbeliever instinctively understands this principle, how much more should we as Christians? An unwillingness to take care of our families is shamefully inconsistent with faith in the gospel and new life in Christ. Not suggesting that we're all unbelievers if we drop the ball in this area. But what I'll say is the way we're living isn't consistent with what we profess we believe. And this text calls us to take action in our homes. The truth is, one of the reasons that the Bible puts so much emphasis on pastors and deacons being people whose houses are in order is because if they don't know how to take care of their own house, how can they take care of God's church? That's what he says. In other words, if we're not ministering to our own family, what business do we have going and ministering to other people's families to the expense of our own? It's wrong. We shouldn't do it. So how do we apply these principles in a godly way? Let me give you a couple of simple thoughts in closing. First, be loving and compassionate. This passage is meant to help us to realize we need to be merciful people. So important. Two, we need to be good stewards. You know, when we are managing resources, we are to manage them wisely. We're not to waste them frivolously. We're to prioritize without partiality. And by the way, part of prioritizing is taking care of our own first, making sure that we're raising our own kids, that we're ministering to our wife, our husband, our mom, our dad, our aunts and uncles, the people that God has placed in our lives. We need to take care of them first. It's our responsibility. Don't frustrate or set up future failures. If you're going to help somebody, make sure that before you do it, you lay out carefully the plan of operation and say, am I hindering this person in the way I'm doing this? That's extremely important. And you know, we don't come to those answers quickly, and we have to make adjustments sometimes. As a missionary, when I lived in Ghana, I had to change the way that I tried to help people all the time because I would learn that did not help them. How can I adjust and help this person in the future? I had to learn that. We had lots of discussions. Some of the most difficult judgment calls that I had to make were in this area of how to help people in a way that didn't hurt them in the future. And so we have to make sure we do that. We have to encourage individual responsibility. And lastly, don't neglect your family. God has given them to us as a as a tremendous blessing and as a ministry. And so we need to make sure that we don't overlook that. Let's bow together for a word of prayer, and then we'll have our prayer time. Father, we pray that you'll help us to understand these truths well. Help us to be convicted where that's necessary. I pray that our hearts would be overwhelmed with grief where we've not acted appropriately. Yet we would also be overwhelmed by encouragement that there's a way forward. We can correct what we've not done well. Father, help us to have big hearts. Help us to love people. Help us not to push to the side those who are truly needy and destitute. But help us to see them in their times of desperation and to compassionately love them. Father, help us to be good stewards of the resources you've given us. Help us not to harm people in the way that we set out to help them. Father, help us to take care of our families the way we're supposed to. Father, bless this church as we seek to take these principles to heart and live in the light of them. We ask these things in Christ's name. Amen.